Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
Hey, it's Matt Leon, and we've got a bonus episode this week of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Recently got the chance to catch up with longtime Flyers beat writer Sam Carcitti, and we talked about his new book that he co-authored with Jeff Hare. It's called Bullies, Catching Up with the Hound, the Hammer, and the Stanley Cup Champion Philadelphia Flyers. Looks back at those tremendous Flyers teams that won the Stanley Cup in the mid-70s. Really interesting conversation, really whets your appetite to check out the book. So let's talk to Sam now. Sam, thanks so much for coming in studio.
Thanks for having me, man.
Before we talk about the book, people obviously familiar. What are you doing now? What's your day-to-day in addition to promoting the book?
We're doing a lot of work with the book. We're actually trying to make the book into a TV series. We've had some negotiations with some production studios and a scripted series, not a documentary, on the fabled Broad Street Bullies, one of the most colorful teams in Philadelphia sports history, not just hockey or the NHL. So that takes up a lot of time, and I'm using Ray Dittinger as my inspiration. I'm dabbling with actually trying to write a play on this as well, and keep busy. Also write for the Hockey News once a week, write a column for the Hockey News. So my days are pretty full.
And just as an aside, and hopefully it comes to fruition, we were talking about the idea of the scripted series, and you mentioned kind of along the lines of what we saw with the Lakers in the 70s and 80s series.
Yes.
That's kind of the idea.
That's our goal, and as I said, it's not a documentary, and it's more on the off-ice exploits of these players, and I'd say maybe 25% of it. We have some episodes written. I'd say about 25% of it is about hockey, but, you know, it's their lives growing up, Bobby Clark cutting school and playing hockey on a pond, and his mom driving up and yanking him off the pond, and just a lot of cool stories that we learned from the players. I can't say enough about the players. They were terrific with their honesty and telling us different stories. So it's mostly, as I said, the awful ice developments and how the players got to be where they were, and a lot of surprising things that I think people will be fascinated with. They were a colorful team, probably the most colorful team, as I said, that Philadelphia has seen maybe in Philadelphia sports history. So we're having fun with it, with the episodes, writing the episodes and trying to put together this play. A great bunch, and as Fred Chiro said, win today, walk together forever, and those guys are still the best of friends.
So let's talk about the book, Bullies. Was this a project that was focused on, or in all the other work you've done over the years, writing, covering the Flyers, did this just kind of come as like as an extension of something else, or you decided to do it because, well, we've got all this great stuff from X, Y, and Z?
Yeah, it was more the 50th anniversary of the Stanley Cup, and originally this was going to come out last year, the book, but we delayed it a year, so it's actually 50 years now since their last Cup. And Jeff Hare, who I wrote the book with, he's a producer, lives in L.A., does a lot of Lifetime movies, and he was also a big part of this because Jeff was a 9-year-old kid living in Roxborough when the Flyers won the Cup. I was a teenager, and you know, you're infatuated with a team when you're a young kid, much more so than later in life, I think. But to Jeff, who I said has done a lot of Lifetime movies and other movies that have been in the studios and has worked with some great people, this is a labor of love, as it was for me. So we started to do this as a TV series and writing episodes on the characters and had so much fun doing it. And then we pitched it to Triumph Books, and they went along with it. And the book really came out of the TV series that we were writing. And as I said, we uncovered some things we didn't expect to uncover. You know, for instance, Ed Snyder was bullied as a youngster growing up in Washington, D.C., a lot of anti-Semitism there. And his kids actually think that that had something to do with the origination of the Broad Street Bullies. He was pushed around, you know, a lot of anti-Jewish friends. And it wasn't until later that he pushed back. And when the Flyers were created, they weren't always the Broad Street Bullies. They actually got pushed around the ice. The first year by the St. Louis Blues, they lost in 7 games in the playoffs in the opening round. The second year, they lost in 4 straight to the Blues. And just as awkwardly, if you will, they got pushed all over the ice. They got beat up by the Barkley brothers, Noel Picard. And at that point, Ed Snyder stepped in and he said to Keith Allen, the GM, this is never going to happen again. You know, we've got to go out and get bigger players, tougher players. I want them to have talent, but we have to change this. And Keith Allen said to him, well, you don't just snap your fingers and make a trade. You know better than me, Ed. And Ed said, no. I'm looking long term. I'm talking about the draft. We have to start drafting bigger players. And that year, 1969, they drafted Dave Schultz and Don Selesky. They already had Bobby Kelly in the system. I should also add they drafted in the second round a guy named Bobby Clark, who played with, wasn't a fighter, but he played with ferociousness. And then a few years later, they added Moose DuPont, and the Broad Street Bullies were born. And I think the seed was planted actually when Ed Snyder was a young kid in D.C. getting pushed around and said, hey, this isn't going to happen again. He had the same mentality when he was owner of the Flyers, and he couldn't take it anymore. And Jack Chevalier coined the nickname. He worked for the Evening Bulletin, the Broad Street Bullies. And should also say, not only did they not get pushed around, but they were a great team. Sometimes that gets lost in the shuffle, how talented they were. The Clarks and the Barbers and the McLeishes and the Ross Lonsberries, Bill Flett. I could go on. And terrific defense. They didn't have a number one guy like a Chris Pronger years later, but they had a lot of guys who were probably number two defensemen on almost any team. They were solid guys that made a few all-star teams, the Ed Van Imps, Barry Ashby's, Joe Watson, Jimmy Watson. I could go on and on. So they were a terrific team, and sometimes that gets lost in a shuffle because of the Broad Street Bullies image that they had.
Yeah, because I don't think it doesn't land if they're not great. Like, it doesn't resonate if you're just skating around beating people up. I mean, there's a certain segment of the fan base that would just enjoy that. But the reason it's lasted this long is obviously you won the Stanley Cup, but they were so good in addition to being physical. And that was, if I understand correctly, that was just at that time in the NHL, like, it was completely foreign. Like, there was never a team like this, right?
Yeah, well, you had the big bad Bruins, and you had the Blues that were a nasty team. So there were some teams that were physical, not as physical as the Flyers, to your point. But the Flyers committed a lot of penalties back then, but they also had the number one penalty kill in the NHL. And, of course, the goalie is a big part of the penalty kill and had the greatest goalie on the planet, Bernie Parent. So, you know, the timing was right, and they had a lot of guys that knew their roles, too. I mean, Rick McLeish was not a great defensive player, but he was the youngest player in NHL history to score 50 goals. You know, he had that beautiful left-to-right move and the wrist shot from the high slot. You had Tom Bladen at the point on their terrific power play. He had a cannon of a shot. You had guys who did dirty work and were great two-way players like Ross Lounsbery, who sometimes doesn't get the credit he deserves. Guys like Orris Kinderchuk. You had stars. You had Hall of Famers like Bill Barber, Bobby Clark, Bernie Parent. Reggie Leach is a borderline Hall of Famer to me, as is Rick McLeish. But it all gelled together. And I should say this happened at a time where Philadelphia was known as the city of losers. So the Flyers came along at just the right time. I mean, the 76ers were 9-73, the worst record in NBA history. The Phillies and Eagles were annually in last place. And lo and behold, this team comes along and captures the heart of the city with not only their style of play. They were tough, like Philadelphia, blue-collar team, like the city of Philadelphia. And as I said, it was just the perfect storm. And, of course, they won cups in 74. They upset the mighty Boston Bruins. Bernie Parent had a shutout in the last game. And the next year, they shut out Buffalo. Bernie Parent had a shutout in that game. And they captured the heart of the city. Joe Watson tells a story that when they first started, Philadelphia was not really ready for an expansion team in 1967. And Joe says they had a welcoming parade, and 20 people showed up. He said there were more people in the parade than there were watching the parade, and cars were going by, and people were giving them the finger and saying, you'll never last here. And he said, what am we getting into? And he said the mayor, who was Jim Tate at the time, had invited them, and he didn't even show up at the presentation after the parade. Flash forward 7 years later, from 20 people at a parade, there's 2 million people at a parade. And then you go to the next season, their second cup, 2.3 million people. I mean, those parades were, parades like that were never seen and have not been seen. Even the Eagles winning the Super Bowl, the parades, I think, were estimated at 900,000. The highest I've seen is 1 million. But yet, 2.3 million people. Philadelphia was starved when the Flyers won the Cup. They were starved for a winner. And the Flyers started that renaissance. After they won, a few years later, the Phillies started winning. And then a few years later, the Eagles started winning. And then the 76ers. So they started the renaissance. And it's cool to hear the stories from these guys, 50 years later. They have some of them have different perspective of that era than they did at the time. Some of them didn't realize how important they were to the history of Philadelphia sports, and they really appreciate it more now, especially since the Flyers have not won a cup since 1975.
We need to take a break. We will have more with Sam Carcini in just a few moments, but right now, want to remind you that this bonus episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. It's time to drive smarter with high-tech features and excellent reliability. It's time for intelligent design, plus exciting performance. Get a new vehicle you'll love. Check out the Honda Civic, Accord, or HRV. See dealer for financing details. And now on this bonus episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with Sam Carcini, co-author of the new book, Bullies, Catching Up with the Hound, the Hammer, and the Stanley Cup Champion Philadelphia Flyers. So how do you approach the book?
Well, we approach it as, most people, if you're a hockey fan or a Flyers fan, you know what happened in 74, 75, or you have a vague idea. If you're younger, you have a vague idea of what happened. So we wanted stories that of the players when they were growing up, players' stories about off-ice developments. We have a whole chapter actually devoted to Rexy's, which was their hangout in West Collingswood, New Jersey, and it was like their second home. And we wanted a lot of stories from Rexy's because some players actually told us they hate breakfast, lunch, and dinner at Rexy's. But they sat at the bar and swapped stories with, everyday people. They were everyday people, and they still are. That's, to me, is a charm of this team. They were – right now you look at the players now, I think a lot of the – in all sports, it's a different life, and it's – because of social media, I think it's hard – for some of the players now, they're under a magnifying glass all the time. You know, I sometimes wonder how the Flyers of 74 and 75 would have done in social media circles. I think they would have broken the internet because of, you know, some of the things they did. And they were just characters. They really were. But anyway, to answer your question, we approached it. We wanted stories that maybe people didn't know. And we got great stories from Rexy's. And I talked to Patty Fietto, whose father, Pat Fietto, owned Rexy's. And then she worked there. And she had tons of stories about the players and different stories from the wives. We have a whole chapter devoted to the wives. They played a big part. They were there for their husbands, and they allowed their husbands to just focus on hockey. And another great story is Myrna Snyder, the wife of Ed Snyder. She really looked out for the players, the players' kids, and especially the wives. She was like, you know, the den mother, if you will. And she treated the Flyers and their families. It was almost like a mom and pop store between her and Ed. And Myrna was a great, great lady. You know, she got to know, if you worked concession stand, she would know your name. She would know, you know, who was sick in your family or how many kids you had. She got to know everybody at the Spectrum. And I think that devotion carried over into the wives and into the players and the whole organization. They were a mom and pop store. You do not see that now. And I think that's charming, too. So we have a lot on Myrna, a lot on the wives and stories that people don't know. Some of the things they did in the community. It was fascinating. And some of the players told us some things that, quite frankly, were really surprising. They were very honest with us. One of the players, I don't want to give it away, but unfortunately, he was molested when he was younger, and he didn't reveal that. He was about 12 years old when that happened, molested by a neighbor. Didn't reveal that to anybody till he was 70 years old. And he talked honestly about what that did to him. And, you know, so there were some surprising things. And as I said, we tried to find stories of the players' growth, not only as players, but as people. And they're really good guys, though. They just have a love for each other. They have a love for the city. And that's why I would say 90% of them settled in the area. These guys were all from Canada. In fact, they were the last team to win the Stanley Cup that was composed of all Canadians, 1975. You know, we didn't have the influx of players from Europe like we have now, but the 75 Flyers were all Canadians, and they're in foreign land. And getting back to Rexy's, Pat Fietto, or Pasquale, as Bobby Clark called him, he was like their mentor, like a father figure to them. If they needed a banker, if they needed a realtor, if they needed a car salesman, he was there for them. And that's why they had this connection with Rexy's, because he was there. And he made them feel at home. That actually is one of my favorite chapters in the book, the chapter on Rexy's and the players' love affair with Rexy's. The wives didn't like it too much because there were a lot of groupies there a lot, and they would be there with their husbands, and the groupies would be handing their husbands their phone numbers right in front of the wives. I mean, we learned a lot about Rexy's God bless the wives for hanging in there. But there were some fascinating stories that Billy Clement gave some great stories, and they all did, really, Joe Watson and on and on. But, yeah, we were fascinated to find things, as I said, that I don't think people knew about.
Are the players – because I don't know that there's a group that's as universally loved and thought of as a collective as this – group of Flyers. Maybe those Phillies, you know, the Utley, Rollins, Howard, but are they surprised 50 years later how they are still treated and still remembered? Like, are any of them like, this is unbelievable, the treatment and the service I still get in Philadelphia?
I think it just, the fans became a part of them. Bernie Parent, rest his soul, he told me that we all did this together. He said the players, the coaches, the city, the fans, he said they were part of us. You know, they motivated us to do better. And, you know, the players felt that love then. So I don't know if they're so surprised 50 years later, because they felt that as they were progressing. And to their credit, the Flyers took advantage of that. Like, you look at the Phillies now. I mean, I don't think there's a fan base now. I think the Phillies fan base, maybe the Eagles to a certain extent, but the Phillies fan base loves that team to pieces. You can just feel it. You can feel the energy when you're in that ballpark. And unfortunately, the Phillies, as we tape this anyway, have not taken advantage of that. I think they're putting too much pressure on themselves to do well. But the Flyers were the opposite. They felt that love, and it helped them. And, you know, and it carried over. To answer your question, I think not that they expect it, but I think that the Flyers players treated the fans like they were part of them. They were part of the team. And and as I said before, I think the love affair is because of the timing too, because the other sports teams in Philadelphia were not doing well. And it was like the first time for a lot of people to win, to experience a championship. The Eagles had won in 60. The Sixers had won in 67. But you didn't feel that outpouring of emotion that you did with the Flyers. Tom Brookshire, the late, great Tom Brookshire, once told me that in 1960, I asked him about the parade. He said, parade? There was no parade. And I forget the store. It was either Strawbridge's or Gimbel's. He said, this was our parade. We went to the department store, and they gave us glasses and mugs that said, World Champions 1960 Philadelphia Eagles. He said, we went in the parking lot and we drove around in a circle. That was our parade. you know, it was different. Again, the timing for the Flyers, people were starved for a winner, and there was just so much love there. And as a result, you had 2 million plus people, and, you know, the mother of all parades. And, so it's a shame when you look at the Flyers and how they have played and over the last few decades, actually, because those players have not been able to experience what it was like with the fans. I think they experienced the players who played in 2010 and that great run to the Stanley Cup final. I think they experienced it to a certain extent, but not to the extent of 74, 75, and 76. In our TV series, we focus on from 67 to 76, and some people say, why 76? They lost the cup that year. Well, they lost the cup, but that was monumental because they beat the Russians in 76, and they stood up. They stood for the NHL, and we have a whole chapter on that and how the Flyers actually told Clarence Campbell, who was the president of the NHL, he tried to give them a pep talk before the Russian game, and the Flyers told him to get out of the locker room, basically, because he had belittled the Flyers, he hated their style, and now all of a sudden he's in there giving a pep talk, telling them you're representing the entire NHL. They thought he was a hypocrite. And we have a lot of great stories, I think, about leading up to that game. Gene Hart, the Flyers Hall of Fame broadcaster, actually tried to teach, or did teach, Ed Snyder some Russian, because Ed wanted to speak Russian to greet the Russians for the luncheon. Well, that turned into a disaster, not because Ed couldn't speak Russian, but because of what he perceived to being poor conduct by the Russians at that luncheon. And we talk about that, and we have, that's a big part of a chapter. So, and we end in 76 with the TV series, if it ever comes about, but we end it with the 1976 finals. They lost to Montreal in four straight, but the players didn't want to leave the ice because the fans gave them a standing ovation for forever. It was like they were saluting their 3 years of excellence. You know, the players just stopped at the boards after the handshake with the Canadians and looked up and shook their heads. They could not believe the fans wouldn't leave the Spectrum because they were being saluted, as I said, for a three-year period where they dominated probably the most dominant Philadelphia sports team since the A's in the 20s and 30s. Maybe more, maybe less. You can argue that the A's, Philadelphia Athletics, had the greatest three-year period in Philadelphia sports history, but can also argue that the Flyers did from 74 to 76. So Yeah, that was a great moment. Even though they lost in 76, and I should say Bernie Prant, Rick McLeish, and Gary Dornhofer were injured and didn't play in that final. So even though they lost in 76, that team is remembered really fondly.
So once again, the book, Bullies. I know as we're recording this, it officially was released yesterday, October 7th. Where can people find it if they want to check it out?
Yeah, they can find it in bookstores or on Amazon.com, or you can go to Triumph Publications. That's our publisher. And I really appreciate the time, and hopefully people will enjoy the book.
And that will do it for this bonus episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Sam Carcitti for coming in studio and being our guest, talking about his new book, Bullies, Catching Up with the Hound, the Hammer, and the Stanley Cup champion, Philadelphia Flyers. Now, we will have another episode coming your way soon. Thanks so much for listening.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.